Holmes & Hops is proudly supported by Platt Insurance, your local independent insurance agency offering auto, home, life, business, and farm insurance. They also have a team of specialists that help you with insuring your brewery or winery. Platt Insurance, helping you protect your tomorrow. For more information or a quote, please call them at 330-856-6244 or visit them on the web at plattinsurance.com. Hey everyone, Lisa Resnick here, Holmes & Hops podcast studio. I am sitting with Derek McDowell, Youngstown Fleet, community leader, like you name it, he's got it. And it is super early in the morning, but you know what? It's election week, so why not have a beer before 9 a.m.?
Yeah, I love these cups with the logo and everything.
I know, cheers.
Cheers. You got the...
They're smaller glasses.
They got the Oh Wow on the
I
back.
I know.
The Holmes & Hops on the front. It is early to be.
It really is, but it's been one hell of a week. And
it's been a heck of a 90 days for me. So that's good.
So we are drinking Seven Frogs of Modern Methods. And not only are we breaking my rule of the 5%, but we're also breaking pretty much the traditional rule across the board. If there's no sporting event, to be drinking before noon. So why not?
You went with quantity over...
That's right.
It's a smaller
thumb. It is a smaller class. We got work to do today. But so I'm with Derek. Derek has had definitely a lot happening in his life.
Yeah.
And no doubt, like, Derek and I can go on and on about any controversial topic.
We need a timer.
Whether it's race, religion, or politics, like, yeah. Derek and I, and probably sex, we probably have covered every controversial topic that is out there. And
here we still are.
I know, right? So you can still be friends afterwards, yeah. Right?
I don't know if the community is going to let me out of this room by the time we're done. If we keep going, something's going to line the people up outside your house.
And be like, what?
We see you through that window. Come outside.
So tell us, Derek, what's been going on the past like 90 days? And actually, I mean, I know for a fact it's been even well before the 90 days.
Yeah.
So tell us your story there of, like, let's specify, tell us your story when it comes to your recent activity, beginning to
end.
Well,
let's, in summation, I sold a house, bought a house, and bought a building all at the same time, which probably wasn't the smartest thing to do, but, you know, this pandemic hit and I had a little extra time on my hands, so I thought I'd make use of it.
There you go.
But that in part was because of my dynamic duo over here who assisted, you know,
it's like
Jordan and Pippen on the court. I'm pretty sure I was coerced into a lot of this.
I have no idea what you're talking about. That is not true.
I can remember a conversation in the parking lot of Republic Steel where it's
That's
like,
right.
You know, you're going to do it. And yeah. I'm like, I don't have this kind of money.
Nah. I'm like, we'll figure out a way. I do have a tendency to do that.
Yeah. It's like, I don't even know if you'd categorize that as like a nudge. That was like a kick off the Grand Canyon cliff or something.
But my whole thing is like, if you're a creator, you need to be able to create. And you are.
Yeah. You know what? You're actually... very appreciated for what you did, because to get over that hump, you know, it's sometimes a professional hump, but it's a personal hump too, because it was foreign territory and probably for both of us. But I think, you know, there's times where you want to be, you know, as brave as you can be and you think you're as outgoing as the next person. And then it takes that nudge from someone else who sees something about you or in you you don't see yourself to push you, you know. And so I think, it was very much necessary to do, and I'm very thankful for it. You know, it's been a heck of a journey and a ride, but I look back on it and I'm like, man, you know, and I think I posted about it. We're talking about actually really about 8 or 9 months.
Yes.
Of conversation and real in-depth work towards this goal. But it's just interesting because it seems so short of a time frame, because I can remember us standing in that parking lot of Republic Steel having that conversation, and it feels like yesterday. Yep.
until we were in it, the negotiation process and everything.
Yeah, then it was feels like forever.
It's like, come on.
40 days of discovery. And you're like, yeah. Is anybody working right now?
I know.
Day 39 and you're like...
you're like, am I about to buy a building?
Yeah. That actually did pop up.
Right? Yeah,
it's kind of late at that point.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, you're like, I think I'm about to buy a building.
That's right.
You know? It wasn't when we signed the purchase agreement. It wasn't when, you know, you had to go deposit $10,000.
It's almost like having your first kid or maybe every kid. Like during the whole entire process of pregnancy, you're like, oh, okay. And then right before the baby's about to be born, you're like, holy shit, am I about to be a parent?
It's kind of late to be here. Then you might ask, like, do you have any diapers at home or a place for the kid to sleep? I remember I had my oldest daughter and I was so excited. And when my when her mom was being released from the hospital, you know, I pulled the car up and they're wheeling her down. And the nurse recognizes that my car is on a flat. And she goes, you can't leave.
What?
I said, what's wrong? And she goes, your car is on a flat and we can't allow her to leave. And I'm like, oh. Well, what am I supposed to, you know what I mean?
I'm what am I supposed to do?
You want me to change it right here? So I had to change the tire right there in the parking lot of Northside Hospital. So that's what the last 8 months have felt like. Just birthed a child. And as soon as you're ready to take it home, you got a flat.
This is true. But I will say we definitely try to make it as painless as
absolutely.
Possible.
Yeah, I can't imagine... you know, negotiating something like this in another city, you know, there's some advantages, with access. You know, we got direct access to a lot of the people we needed to get to, you know, there weren't, an exorbitant amount of wait times on things unless it was just something you had to wait for, you know, the EPA phase one environmental studies. I mean, there's no rushing that, you know, you're doing a lot of historical digging about a property you're going to buy as much as I wanted to rush that process and just get through it, that 40 days was important. And we got a 300 plus page report after that to tell us a lot of the things we wanted to know. So, yeah, I mean, we really had a challenging thing to go through, but we're all the better for it. I mean, how many inspections and appraisals and contracts and purchase agreements and lawyers did we talk to? And now, you know. Maybe a couple of them still like us and a couple of them don't. I don't know.
I bet you more people in the commercial world still like us a lot more than what they did on your residential side. They probably don't like me very much. But we won't go there.
Some of your language and then some of my language. And then we get back and we go like, I told you I was right. I didn't want to believe that about that person. They seem so nice.
I mean, they could be nice, but whether or not they're good at what they're doing is a whole other discussion.
I feel like most people, this is a podcast for just you and I.
Yes.
Like we're allowing the audience to just sit and listen to you and I. They may not understand, but one day you will.
Just have a conversation with us and you'll get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so standing outside of Republic, in which you know both of us love that building as well.
Yeah.
But you did. You looked across the street.
I did. Yeah.
And you're like, what's going on with that building?
Well, part of my process is I'm a visual person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as much as you like to say you're a creative and have vision, which, you know, I believe a lot of people do, and including myself, I can see things that exist and I can see things that don't exist yet and see the potential in things. But in that moment when you and I stood in the parking lot of Republic, you know, that was a moment where I needed to visualize and try to piece together some of the components of what we were talking about. So standing in Republic, pretending that we owned that space and recognizing some of the challenges that we would have in owning that space caused me to look across the street and say, hey, we could solve some of the challenge with this space by
looking
over there. And then that space became a whole different look, because I don't believe I'd ever looked over at that space in the way that we looked at it that day. And it's still interesting to try and tell people about the space now, like, where is it at again? You know, and you can tell them all the landmarks around the building, but it's still you know, kind of tucked away in its own little, you know, playground area over there. And I love it.
What I love about the location is that it does. It is like the beginning of the city.
Yeah.
Well, actually, depending which way you go in, but it's
a corridor for it sure. Is. That bridge coming from the east side of, you know, Youngstown.
Exactly.
It's very much framed by, you know, Republic and this building, you know, and Valley Foods is there as well.
And you think about Cleveland and how they made districts or landmark areas, identify different areas commercially within their city.
Yeah.
So you had how many different districts that they have down there that they keep reinventing and reinventing themselves. And I love the fact that Youngstown, besides, because everything has been so just Federal Plaza.
Yeah.
I love the fact that we're expanding the city even further and showing how much more depth the city has. And it is enough space away. It's close enough, but yet enough away to have its own identifiable area, which is huge.
Well, it's like pushing the limit with spandex, right? How much more room do we have in these things?
People, I think of Spanx, and I'm like,
how much more room can I get out of this
we
thing?
We do definitely push that.
Yeah. No, but it's necessary. I mean, I've said it for years, quite honestly. I've walked Federal a number of times, and I said that any healthy city cannot survive with simply one quote-unquote strip. There's got to be alternative options for people, and it's like all ships rise with that tide. You know, yep. If we don't have spaces and places that people can go in alternative to places they've been often, they'll get bored, they'll get burnt out, and we won't see the growth that's necessary. And so, yeah, it is stretching the community to say, can something exist beyond Federal and allow Federal to still do well and point to some other areas? The interesting thing is in our research, finding out that this area with Republic and, you know, this building that we just purchased is already zoned for mixed use community.
Yes.
You know, it's in that district already. And, you know, it's in a number of different zones.
It's also in the opportunity zone.
Opportunity zone, enterprise zone, you know, hub zone, which is a historically underutilized business zone. So we've found out a lot about this area. And it's like, okay.
Yep.
This isn't as difficult, again, as we thought it was going to be. Not to disparage the process we had to go through, the negotiating with the seller and, you know, the contracts that we had to put together and the agreements, the give and the take, the ebb and the flow of it, you know, the negotiations. But there's some great advantage that's already in place. Having A&C Beverage there.
Yes.
When you talk about being able to acquire a liquor license for the building and doing some things around wedding reception, you know, just any kind of gathering space, that leaves us a lot more position for those things. So the access that we already have in place, it's like, it's just waiting for someone to come by and grab hold of it and take the reins.
And you also have all the exterior space as well. So yeah. not only do you have the large amount of square footage in the building, which is honestly, I look at it as it's not as intimidating because it is broken down between the two buildings.
Yeah.
So you can easily phase it.
Yeah, it's interesting because if you look at some comparable projects in their scope, the funny thing is it puts the scale inside, you know, in yes. much greater context. It's like, man, this is close to 25,000 square feet in a comparable scope project that I saw in Tampa, Florida is 73,000 square feet.
Yes.
Right? So we're like 50,000 square feet off. You know, what are we going to do? How do we make up that difference? You know, and it's like, how about you just start with the 25,000 square
like
feet?
I feel like that's good.
Yeah. And I had that, you know, panic moment for a second, like I'm 50,000 square feet short. But no, it is, as you stated, you know, phase it out and it makes it an elephant that we can, you know, take small bites and chunks off of and really have the conversation about what do we do first and what do we do next. And that becomes much more manageable than thinking about like you said, being a person of vision, knowing where you can see this go, and getting excited about that, but not moving too quickly that you pigeonhole yourself, because there's still a lot of room for the community to engage and give feedback and input before you start making solid, concrete decisions. And, you know, you've got to give pause to the fact that one of these buildings that we own is from 1870.
Yes.
You know, it's 150 years old, and how you, you know, care for and administer and, you know, bring restoration to a building like that. That's identifiably, from some of the comments and things I've heard, one of the oldest standing buildings in the downtown area. That means something.
It does.
You know, and how our community has a conversation around, puts legislation in place about how we care for historical buildings matters. It's a conversation that's come up a number of times, where you have the old Welsh church that the Catholic diocese owns and, you know, wants to have off of their property and to relocate, but we don't have the methodology in place.
I don't understand how that's going to happen.
I don't either. Okay. And it's you know, it's unfortunate that, yeah, it's unfortunate you get to a space where it's like the 11th hour and you've got to make some hard decision before someone else pulls the trigger for you and makes a decision that we regret later. Thankfully, we were able to get a hold of this property before, you know, some of the previous, you know, modus operandi of the seller, you know, was to scrap and, you know, and try and...
They were looking at scrapping it, and there were also other interested parties.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm glad that we were able to... I mean, we had that urgency. We talked about, we really need to move on this now.
That's right.
And so you go from Republic Steel parking lot, like, no way, to like, hey, let's...
let's do this.
Before anybody finds out.
I believe you were the one that was a bit more, no way. I was like, yes, yes,
yeah,
you can.
Yeah, you can.
And you can try this route. You could try that route.
And I could tell you a lot of where I was coming from in that moment was, you know, being honest with yourself about your business model at the time. You know, Youngstown Flea is not some cash cow. Very well supported by the community.
Yes.
Very financially stable. But it's not a cash cow. It wasn't meant to be. It was meant to be community driven, you know, an ecosystem and a platform for small businesses. And anytime you're dealing with small businesses, I mean, you're not talking about companies that have 500 employees. You're talking about the majority of them being 1-2 employee family owned businesses that aren't killing it themselves. And so our business model was very easy to figure out. And so when you're standing there looking in the parking lot of a building that's, you know, $700,000 plus.
Yes.
And you're looking across the street at the building, you have no clue what it's valued at.
Yes.
It can be, you know,
it can be a bit intimidating. for sure.
It wasn't intimidating in its potential, for sure.
No.
There was no question. You and I, we didn't debate about what could be. It
Ever.
Was just, you know, how can, you
yes.
know, like, not the what or the when or why. It was just like, how, you know?
Exactly.
I don't know if you felt it, you know, you could share that with me, but I didn't see at the moment, because you're talking, you know, January into a little bit of February, you know, the economy hadn't been really hit by, we had glimpses of and previews of COVID on its way. But we weren't shut down as an economy. And so you didn't see funding all over the place, like the CARES Act and PPP and, you know, economic disaster loans and really, you know, minority business grants and things like that you see now. So the pathway then wasn't as clear, right? You might have just been thinking you can go to a bank and get a conventional loan and, you know,
and try it that route.
Sure. And so, you know, it did become much more clear of a pathway as we began. And so that goes back to that old, you know, whatever proverb. It says that, you know, a journey of a lifetime begins with the first step.
That's right.
And it really was. It was like you were like, hey, let me just, you know, draft a letter of intent. And I'm like, what's a letter of intent?
You're like, is this a contract? I'm like, no, it's just your intention.
Yeah, it's just letting them know, like, we want to show you we're serious. And I'm
did
like, are we serious though?
Do you ever think, I wonder, actually... I should know this, and I will Google this after the podcast, but letter of intent, doesn't it sound like something from like 17, like,
oh, yeah,
like,
I mean,
like maybe our founding fathers sent sent the English king their letter of intent to become their own nation.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the guy you send in every epic battle movie to let people know, like, we're going to conquer you. Yes. Like, here's the guy who's going to give you our letter of intent right here. It's a scroll.
It's and it's true. Like,
hey, we're going to send back a guy with his head cut off, letting you know we're not just going to turn over this property that easy.
Like, not at that amount.
Do we want to tell the people how far off we are on our letter of intent?
Well, it's just one of those things. I think it's always
we had to test the waters on our first offer.
Well, I think that's the case always, and in commercial business is business, and they should understand that as well. Is I mean, there's always the two different perspectives.
They sent back our messenger with no message at all.
There's always the two different perspectives. There's the investment value, which that's what the buyers are looking at.
Yeah.
Like, they're looking at, okay, this is an investment purchase. How much money am I going to have to put into it additionally? Sellers have a tendency to, well, they look at it, the market value, but not only that, but they sometimes I see in the commercial world, buildings being sold as if the investment was already done.
Yeah, gotcha.
And and they weren't.
It's difficult, you know, from a, you know, I don't think a buyer is going to get a seller to understand, like, hey, you know how much money I'm going to have to put into this thing? As if, and quite honestly.
Sellers don't care.
Yeah. We had to be realistic about that because you and I talked and said.
We got to have a cap.
Yeah. Once we add all the things up that we would need to invest in this property, there's no way a seller could compensate us for that in the sale price. You know what I mean? They'd have to give us the building free at that point.
Exactly. And a couple of dollars at that.
Yeah. You'd be paying us to take this thing off your hands.
That's right.
But I do believe, you know, so most people know if you saw the Business Journal article, Youngstown Flea pays $206,000 for this property. You know, it was very interesting going in with a very, very competitive offer.
Yes, it was very.
And they're, you know, again, sending that messenger over to them in our letter of intent is like that epic battle, you know, scene where it's like, hey, I'm here to let you know you've been conquered.
I went over to the listing agent and I
opened the scroll.
I unscrolled the document and I said, hear ye.
And they were like, roll that thing back up and take it where you got it from.
Exactly.
Which was, it was interesting. I think, you know, I don't know if you learned anything because you've done it a number of times and you sort of like, sure? But I learned something.
But sometimes. As you know, so from this is what happened. So we did. We went and saw the Republic building and we wanted to go forward, check out Northeast Ohio Fabricators, in which we did, or Northeast Fabricators. And I don't know why I always want to throw Ohio in there. Probably because we're in Northeast Ohio. But then the pandemic got a little bit more intense. And before we spoke about the property again.
Yeah.
And while I started off in commercial in DC, this was my first commercial transaction in Youngstown, Ohio.
Yeah.
Which was super awesome. I could not imagine a better person. See? To go through the process.
To share our first.
I know, that's right.
No, I was excited. You know, I think that, you know, for you to be able to kick off something.
Well,
you
called me up and you said, hey, do you want me to be your first transaction? I was like, that'd be awesome.
And to carry it to completion and successfully be able to, you know, not fluff it. There was no fluff to this. This isn't something that, you know, it's just going to be a website testimonial with a guy smiling. You know, this was a real achievement for us both. And we got to share in, you know, certainly this is my first commercial purchase. And so we'll remember that together. And
always,
you know, quite honestly.
And we both kept it on the download.
Yeah. I mean,
I actually even said to Derek after closing when we were in the building, I was like, I cannot believe I kept this quiet this long. But I did. Like, it's not my news to tell. It's not for me.
Yeah. And that was a very interesting perspective as well, because I was able to do so because I think there's this sort of underlying component in the city of Youngstown that we can put things out too quickly well before we've got our footing. And that sort of ends up with our foot in our mouth in some instances. And so that's been my MO from the beginning of the flea itself, well before talking about purchasing a building, as I built the flea and got at its foundation well before we had our first flea. And then when we had our first flea, we came out and backed up traffic up Market Street Bridge and South Avenue. And it was this newest phenomenon downtown that even city officials and those who are in the know, there were a few people who knew about it, but most people had the perception of like, where did this come from? And, you know, same thing with the building. I think the Business Journal was the first to break it from probably the court records and the sale.
Yes, they have one of their employees that sit at the courthouse and they, you know, they watch.
Scan.
Yes.
But other than that, you know, it was a hush-hush thing. And we knew that for a number of reasons, right? When you're negotiating a property that you see such value in future endeavors, you know, with riverfront, you know, revitalization coming. And who knows, again, how far off we are from there. But,
well, and your interest can spark other people's interest
absolutely.
As well.
Yeah.
We already knew that there were people who were interested because we found out through the grapevine of them talking a little too much.
Exactly.
So we knew not to say anything on our end because that's the last thing. I mean, any salesperson knows that
when you're working on a deal.
Yeah. You don't say anything.
When I managed at AT&T for 12 and a half years, and I would tell my sales employees, you're talking too loud.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you have, you know, 11 sales employees and they're all in the same space working on different, projects with a customer. And you speak about something and the other customer overhears that, but they don't have the context of what we're talking about, right? There's a difference between Lisa, who may have a corporate account with AT&T and 37 phones and the offer that's on the table for you, compared to Derek, who's got one cell phone and paying $50 a month. Compared to someone paying, $1,500 a month. And so I would tell my sales employees, not out of some, conspiring secrecy, but just that perspective helps us understand that if more people hear about the deal that we're working on for this building, it could cause some jockeying for position and now that the seller sees this additional interest in their property.
How's that going to impact them?
Yeah, how's that impact the purchase price? And, you know, we want to get them to the table. And, you know, you and I know how aggressively we push to get a purchase agreement in place to solidify things. Like, there was a lot of back and forth and hypotheticals and this and that and what if. And we're like, let's just get something locked in so that we can.
It definitely takes a lot more time in commercial real estate to lock in everybody with an actual contract agreement versus residential, when you're like, oh, here's our offer, seller accepts, everybody initials, voila, you're done. And it's a template that basically, not to downplay what us real estate agents do, but we do, we fill in the blank. We're not supposed to be practicing law.
Yeah.
But obviously in the commercial world, it's a little bit more complex and you want to make sure that your clients are covered.
Yeah. One of the things I want to say to you, and very much, I try to use you like I try to use my wife, and I don't mean use in a derogatory term, but we, for our anniversary, went to Cuba last year.
Yeah.
My wife's Spanish and speaks Spanish. And so I got upset in Cuba and I wanted my wife to yell at this person in Spanish. So I'm telling my wife, tell them, you know, our luggage, and not, you know, in some pretentious way, but it was like, this person just tossed our luggage out of, you know, I'm like, tell them, you know, my wife's like, number one, I don't know how to say that. And number two, I wouldn't say it if I could.
There you go.
Right. And so my wife interpreted the moment for me and you did that as well. Right.
Yes.
There were moments of contention, not bad, you know, just real contention in a process where you're negotiating contractually.
Yes.
And someone feels like, hey, we're not living up to the parameters of this contract. And I tried to use you to go yell at somebody and say, hey, go tell them, you know, how I'm feeling right now. And you were that voice of reason. And at times a voice that I didn't want to hear in that moment, but was necessary because it could have, you know, rock the boat in this transaction. And, you know, not that I wasn't justified in my feelings of the process.
No, and I said that to you. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah. But I'm thankful for, you know, and that's part of the you know, I don't know if that was an extra sprinkle you threw on with the client or process, but, you know, being able, that's quite honestly, our friendship, we were able to have those things, right, outside the building, in the parking lots, and have those personal moments. But when we were negotiating inside those, you know, offices with the seller and the realtor, and inside the building with the property manager and those kind of things, it was purely, hey, you know, here's my realtor and here's the client.
Yes,
and
it was business.
And it was business. And we left those personal things aside, you know what I mean? And so it was wonderful to have someone on both ends of that spectrum, on a personal level as well as a professional level, but never mixed, I don't think. We celebrated, you know, appropriately, and we, you know,
exactly.
I mean? We legislated appropriately in those moments. And it took some tug of war in instances, but, you know, I allowed you to do your job and trusted you, and you allowed me to express myself and trusted that. And like, hey, he got it off his chest now. Let's get back to. And you always reminded me of what the goal was, right? The goal was, let's get this before we worry about this and before, you know, and let's not
worry about something unless it happens.
I think I hated you when you said that. Not really, but, you know, I'm one of those like proactive, let's not let this happen, you know, and you were like, but it hasn't happened.
Yes. I mean, and I think that I think that we came to a fair balance agreement of how it would be handled.
Yeah.
I really do. Like,
you're proactive in that way too. Like, I'm going to send an email right now.
Yes. But
carefully worded.
Exactly. Very carefully worded. Yeah.
But it helped quell the, you know, frustration in that moment. It wasn't, I'm going to send an email later, or I'm going to address this, let me take care of it. It was like, hey, let's, you know, this is happening now. I know how you're feeling right now, but let me handle it now in a way that I know how to handle it. And so the poise and posture you carried for this to be your first, you know, in Youngstown, let's not pretend that this is your first rodeo at all.
But it is my first in Youngstown.
Yeah, for Youngstown. And it is a different animal.
It is a different beast. To residential and commercial, it's a different beast.
Yeah. So I'm thankful.
I mean, like, I came from a world of Trammell Crows, CBREs.
I don't know what that is.
Cushman and Wakefield, they're all commercial industries. Yeah. Or like you have your development companies, like Low Enterprises, where I first started. And you have your large construction. So like, and then you also have your governmental bar, like DC is insane when it comes to going through approvals and permits and everything. So, I mean, but I came from a different world to not an easier world. It's not to adapt to how the transactions occur here, where are we at in the process. And one thing in life in general, no matter what, whether it's personal, work, anything, I never believe I know everything.
So, oh, you can't do that in Youngstown, I'm sure.
No, you can't.
Figured out in this process.
Like, you can't know everything. Processes change. It's different for everyone. And honestly, that's also why I love it. Because if it was the same mundane routine all the time, I'd be done. I'm not a paper pusher. That's not my personality.
Sure. This was exciting
it
too,
was, it,
right?
But
I mean, there were some
it?
Moments where you and I talked, you know, quote unquote offline about the process, and we were just like,
but it is awesome.
Yeah.
And what's so cool about it, and I said this to you before, what you're doing is awesome for you. It's awesome for your family. It's awesome for your business, but it's awesome for Youngstown.
Yeah.
And not to put pressure on you or anything like that, but like the impact that you have directly with the community. I mean, this is like the city residents, the suburban residents, like the entire scope around the valley, honestly, is extraordinary, and it's very positive.
Yeah. There's this, you know, line in a song from Jay-Z that he talks about, you'd have to be brainless to go through unnecessary changes.
Yeah.
You know, and for me, this process sometimes speaks of that. Like, you have to want to go through what you and I just went through. But what makes it rewarding is understanding why you're going through it.
Yes.
That it's much bigger than me. It's much bigger than the business. It's much bigger than my family. Though all those things are wrapped into it and inclusive
yes.
in this journey, it is for us all. And you would have to be brainless to unnecessarily go through these changes, but it wasn't an unnecessary thing. This was an absolute necessity, and you were instrumental in nudging me to take the first step. You know, not that I'd dreamed of, you know, we had looked at other yeah. buildings. We had had this discussion. It had been dancing around
in my
brain.
We yeah. went downtown.
yeah. You know, this has been dancing in my brain for a couple of years. We wanted to build the Flea and get its foundation because, you know, going after a property, sort of running into a building while everybody else is running out of a building, you know, that sounds like some superhero kind of stuff, right? And that's what we were doing. To be honest with you, the statement you made earlier about our pause during COVID, if you notice what you said was during COVID, not because of COVID.
Yes.
We didn't pause because of COVID. Like, we pushed through. I mean, the world was going through a pandemic and we were sensitive to that, but recognized we understand why, because this was actually to help the Youngstown Flea become more sustainable through a pandemic.
That's right.
And so we had a pause for a specific reason. We had some behind the scenes work that needed to get done, gathering your financials for a business and really gathering enough fortitude to take that to someone, to show them a vision and a plan, and that this is a worthy cause to invest in. You know, that was the due diligence we had to do, but nothing about the pandemic in this instance caused us to pause. You know, we didn't run into because of the pandemic. It was just during the pandemic we had to take a moment. And there were some side notes and footnotes of things that we had to process and get through that are, you know, less important, that caused a small delay. But for Youngstown, I think one of the things that we can take from this is not because of, but in even during. Right?
That's right.
Not because of a pandemic, and even during the pandemic, there was still work to do. And
yeah.
we recognize that. And I know I personally recognize that and took that on. And again, you'd have to be brainless to unnecessarily go through that change, but it was very much a necessity for us to do this.
I agree.
And I don't regret it one bit. You
know,
I've got to go through it a million times over, having you by my side and my wife by my side and my family and this community. This community has been amazing in its support. Who knew, right? When the Business Journal broke the article, I got a text from a friend that said, look at the overwhelming sentiment of support for what you're doing, you know, and you sometimes don't count the cost of what you're doing, because what I'm doing is not for some award or trophy or ribbon or sticker or button or accolade or, you know, nobody pumps my gas at the gas station for me. You know,
it is truly. Well, if we lived in Jersey, they would.
Yeah, that was odd to me. I got out of my car and I'm like, no. I don't do full service. And
the guy was like, I was like, damn, this is awesome.
The guy was like, no, we have to pump your gas for you. I'm like, oh, why?
That was part of their.
There's something.
That was from my understanding, which is very basic, but that was part of their stimulus for employment.
Gotcha.
Was to offer, like, trying to think of job creation.
Yeah.
Like, that's something that.
I knew of one gas station in Youngstown years ago that used to do
yes.
full service. It was in Cornersburg,
yes.
right on the corner of Meridian and
I Canfield drove there Road. Specifically.
Did you? That's bougie of you, coming from D.C. probably.
Oh, 100, yeah.
Did you have some app that told you about this one gas station on the west side?
I think I did that when I was like 16. Are you kidding?
But yeah, you know, the excitement around it. And that's why we interestingly did so quickly the open house tour. tour of the building because I wanted to use that momentum to invigorate the community even more to say, when's the last time they've been in a space like this that has been sitting dormant and vacant for years and decades? And so it just felt right to just go ahead and open the doors. Although I got a text message from someone 15 minutes before the open house, warning me of all the potential hazards that could exist.
Someone who may have been part of the process as well.
For sure.
She was warning very politely.
Yeah. And it was great, you know, but I was like, hey, I don't even know what to do at this point. We're 15 minutes out.
Maybe the text should have came 2 days ago. Yeah.
Like, what are you doing? I'm like, I don't know. What am I doing? There is a mental shift, too, that you have to make, you know, because, again, we've been operating. And again, another probably point to take is we cannot get nostalgic about the way we do business. You can't, right? You can't rest your hat. As you stated, it would be boring to rest your hat on this is how every commercial property transaction is going to go. You don't want it to go that way. And when we get nostalgic about how we do business and how we make money, and the processes that we go through, you know, for 5 years, we've operated out of a parking lot. We got our process down pat. We know what time we need to get there. We know what load in looks like. We know what load out looks like. We know how to draw the community out in a decent way. And you get comfortable in that. And then you realize that in order to make something strong and sustainable and really have the impact that it needs to have in this community, you can't get nostalgic about the way we've been doing business and try and hang on to that. I welcome change. Even though, and again, of the parking lot, there was this hesitation that was specifically hinged on the resources that we had in our bank. But when it comes to the way we operate, we absolutely 110% knew that if we don't shift here now during this pandemic, and I'll tell you something I learned, an old boss of mine from AT&T, I had an employee that, you know, quite honestly, you know, he wasn't cutting it with his sales numbers, didn't get along with the rest of the team well. And, you know, we were union. And so very difficult to work through.
AT&T's union?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
On the home phone side at the time and on the cell phone side, they just adopted the cell phone employees into their union. Communication workers, CWA. And so my boss is in town and he's asking me how things are going. You know, how's the store? And I'm like, everything's going great. I kind of got this one employee, though, who... He just rocks the boat and upsets the apple cart with everybody. He just seems to be at odds with everyone. And sales is, you know, it's competitive, right? It's you stole my customer and that was my sale and this and that. And
it gets like that in real estate too.
So my boss says, "Well, what are you going to do? You know, this is your store. I put you in place. It's your call." And I said, "You know, I'm going to give it a little bit, but I'm working with him, but I'm not sure he's going to cut it. You know, this may not be the right seat on the bus." That's what they used to use in that terminology, right? And so he looked at me and he says, "Hey, it's ultimately your decision. I trust you and I'll back whatever decision you decide if you decide to let this employee go." And I said, I'll let you know how it goes." And I think the conversation's over. And at that point, you know, he looks at me and he says, "But I will tell you this." And I knew right then, I'm like, "Oh my gosh, it's going to be something I don't want to hear."
Yep.
Right. And what he said to me was, he says, "I'll tell you this." He goes, "If you learn to manage people like him," and what he meant was difficult, challenging people, everything that I had described about what was going on with this employee. He said, "If you learn to manage people like him, it makes managing everyone else that much easier."
Yep.
So I flipped my entire management and mentality and went about things from a difficult standpoint first, and then you can enjoy the easier things. And so you and I, it was like this was what we thought was the most difficult thing to get through. It was like, where are we going to get and how are we going to?
Yeah.
You know,
and will they take it?
And the funny thing is I also learned that what we perceive is what's going to be difficult is typically not what is difficult.
I know. That is so true.
Acquisition is not difficult.
No.
Ownership.
Yes.
You
know,
can be much more difficult. Once you get what you asked for, now what? Wow. You know, it reminds me of like Willy Wonka when the girl is like, Daddy, I want a pony, you know? Oh, yeah. And then she wants the squirrel that can crack open.
I believe
open
her name was Baruka.
Baruka, you know what I mean? It's like, you better be careful what you ask for. Like,
that's right.
Do you want a whole chocolate factory?
That's right. and then we found out she was a bad egg. and there's no more Baruka.
Which Youngstown doesn't need any more of those.
No.
And that's also an important thing. Transparency in the process, you mm-hmm. know? That anyone can peel back what you and I did, the negotiations of it, the loan that was provided to the Youngstown Flea for acquisition. And we wanted to make sure that this was something that didn't have the unfortunate, sometimes stain that comes along with transactions in our community.
Yes.
And I welcome people to ask as many questions as you want about this process and the transaction. Because there's nothing to hide. There is no, I get, you know, that apprehension in a community like this where we have been taken advantage of and run amok and led astray and bamboozled and hoodwinked and all that good stuff. You certainly, the people of this community have a right to ask and have a right to feel that anxiety or apprehension about it. But in my instance, and in this case, and in our work, I welcome it. You know, there's nothing for me to be afraid of. The merits in which we were operating under are, you know, beyond reproach in my book. You know,
no, I agree.
We opened ourselves up. We asked for things that were appropriate. We were denied some other things, you know. We asked for 90 days, you know, like here's 40. I think we spent a good amount of time on what number. It was like, well, they're not going to give you 90.
No, nope. That wasn't an option.
You know, it's like we're just bargaining for a couple more days.
It was interesting. But it was like, hey, we want to buy a building. And at some points I was like, did you want to sell the building?
like, you guys are trying to sell this, right? You know, you don't want us to meet you in some back alley.
Yeah. With a bag. A McDonald's bag.
We joked about that often. It's like, it's called that a Happy Meal. Oh my. But again, you know, that's important. And I know in some other instances or some other city or some other community, it's like, why are they talking about that? Because it is important. It's important for people to understand that we approach this from a perspective where we did have to say we have a traceable funding source.
Yes.
Right? There is no way around that.
No.
You know what I mean? And we want that on record. We have to have a peek under the hood documented.
But not only that, but hopefully it'll also help pave the way, if you will, of showing people how you can go about acquiring the money, the monetary means that you need in order to be the creator and the visionary that you want, businessman, whatever it may be.
I remember years ago, a YSU professor told me, and she was in I forget what department it was, but I spoke to a class about entrepreneurship, and I was able to present my business at the time, and one of the comments this professor made was, you should be very careful about being a creative and the CEO of your own company. And I go, why do you say that? And she said, because they're from two different worlds. And from a business perspective, it can be dangerous if you don't understand your creative and the role that it plays in business and a CEO and the role they play in business. And so she gave an example of a creative, if something needs to be gold, a creative wants to melt down real gold and wrap this microphone that we do Homes and Hops on in real gold to present it to the next interviewee. Like, check out my new gold mic. You know what I mean?
That's true.
A CEO is going to say, yeah, but we can achieve that gold mic without the expense of melting down real gold and tanking the company.
That is true.
And so there's this healthy balance of what we talk about as being a creative and wanting something that can help advance, you know, all of the ideas and vision that you have, and balancing that with the CEO mentality of how can we approach this in a reasonable, cost effective way, right?
That's right.
And that's a hard balance. You know, sometimes we want what we want, but we're not willing to do the work necessary to get it. And there was work that only I could do that you couldn't do.
True.
And there was work that, you know, I wasn't in the room in every situation and every conversation. And quite honestly, I'm sure you were happy about that.
Yes, I was.
So everyone's got to stay in their lane and do their part. And that requires a lot of trust.
Yeah.
I don't think there were moments that came across where I'm like, I don't trust her. You know what I mean? Yep. Like, there were always moments where I'm like, I got to go do this while you go do that.
That's right.
You know, if it was, I mean, we had a list. I'm like, I got 8 lawyers to call.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, I got 8, you know, EPA environmentalists, you know, that I need to get a hold of, or whatever that number was. But we each stayed in our own lane, and we balanced each other in that creative mentality and that CEO mentality to arrive at things that meshed really well. So there's, I think, you know, this conversation probably sounds, you know, strange to some listening, but there are nuggets in this process for us as individuals in our work, collectively, and how you find someone to trust with your vision and how you operate out of that. And then there's examples that break the cycle of things that have gone on in Youngstown with, you know, transactional mentality, perception, all of that, right? It's easy to perceive like, oh, well, here's this next large purchase that went on in the community by some unknowing person that doesn't have a lot of detail to it with substance, and I can't find out more about it, so it must be fishy.
Yes.
You know, you're like, well, hold on a second. You know what I mean? Like, there's some explanations for a lot of those things.
Or maybe we're just being upfront.
You know what I mean? And then, you know, the meat of what's to come for Youngstown and the shift that this is going to make. And there's still more to come.
Exactly.
That I think a lot of people maybe who are just about to give up hope or who don't want to step out there and unnecessarily go through these changes, quote unquote, just know that it is necessary and well worth it to put yourself through these changes and these processes for the greater good of us all. It's a noble cause, and we need more honest kings and queens to administer, you know, judgment and, you know, and over their domain, you know, so to speak. And when you talk about property ownership, it's like, we want to see honest business owners and community residents acquire, you know, properties, whether that be residential or commercial. Right?
This is true.
Because there's a difference. I heard this quote years ago. Nobody washes a rental car.
Oh, that's true.
And I go, Now, some people, they just love any car that they're driving to be clean. But in most cases, nobody washes a rental car. And the question is why? And it's because you don't own it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no sense in investing in something you don't own. I mean,
you
car
don't even
wash,
want to put gas in a rental car.
Yeah. Car washes aren't cheap if you're going to do it right, right? And they say, drive it like a rental car. Why? That speaks to ownership. When you drive something like a rental car, that means you're driving it in a way that I wouldn't drive my own personal car like this.
That's right.
But ownership suggests that, oh, you know what I mean? I have to take care of. I'm a steward for this piece of property now. And that's how I see things. Yeah, the Youngstown Flea and our name is on the deed. But it's more about stewardship for the community as an example to show people what ownership looks like and should look like in a community like this. When we take care of the property, interior, exterior, all of that is at play. And how we, the ethics around transactions. I've seen some things in Youngstown. Just because you can do something doesn't mean you should.
That's true. That is very true.
Yeah. I'm going to stop there with that.
I'm done now. Yeah. Well, I cannot wait to see what happens with these buildings, because I know that, number one, I know that you're going to do your due diligence when it comes to what you are creating, because you do have the CEO in you as well.
Yeah.
As creative as you are, you still do your due diligence.
Yeah. And so, that's necessary too. I mean, it's...
You're responsible.
Yeah. Because, you know, I always say to myself, to whom much is given. And I cannot deny how much has been placed in my hands, how much trust from the community, how much support has been placed in my hands, how much encouragement. And then so to let them down by not doing that due diligence of a business owner, it's unfortunate to have that so much potential be squashed because we didn't want to earn every step.
Yep.
And yeah, so there's zoning and there's occupancy and fire and plumbing and electrical and HVAC and all of that that you've got to get into.
Demo,
you know, and restoration and all of that. But again, what we thought was going to be the difficult pieces, that work's just really beginning. Again, yes. A building from 1870, you know, exploring the historical registry, exploring that opportunity zone, exploring the enterprise zones and a historically underutilized business zone. All of that is due diligence homework that you've got to do that no one pays you a salary for.
No.
Because understanding each of those things helps you understand the next step to make, you know.
Don't you wish you could tally up your sweat equity into the value?
Yeah. I wish I could do it like if you ever seen the movie Matrix where, you know, it's like they're trying to start a motorcycle and she calls back and just like download me how to, you know.
Yes.
Like I wish, you know.
It was that easy.
I could just pop one of those things.
I mean, if we're going that far, let's do the Jetsons. Like, come on.
But it's all, again, well worth it to put ourselves through these necessary changes. And I'm sure you're better off for understanding the animal that Youngstown can be, but understanding that it is surmountable, that can get through whatever we had to call on, whether it was patience, you know, understanding, you know, negotiating, you know, we had to pull on a lot of skill sets to be able to get through this process. And that's part of, you know, the business acumen and level of, you know, rising to the occasion that we need to bring to this community, that some things you're just not going to get overnight.
No.
You know, even this vision, when we talk about phasing out, like we haven't talked a lot about, you know, the vision of this space as of yet, and we will. But we understand that no matter how much we see out there, how many cool things there are in Columbus and Cleveland and, you know, Duluth, Minnesota, I've had people point to things in Amsterdam and Tampa. You know, it's like, we've just got to pace ourselves because this is Youngstown. And part of that is even if you had the resources, you know, you still need to be careful about the pace in which we operate at, because it can be very short-sighted to not listen to and give the community an opportunity to engage with this space and show you how they want you to use it.
I agree.
So as creative and as of a visionary we can be about things, you still need to stop a moment and invite the community in and ask them, what do you see?
Exactly.
You know.
They're going to be your patrons.
Yeah. Yeah. To try and create for someone and not be inclusive of those people and ask them, you know, I would rather, much rather create with the community than just for the community. Now, there's obvious needs that we know are out there. You know, the poverty levels in this community, the job opportunities, like you said, the business acumen, those types of things. Yeah, we know that there are some things that are just foundational components of the community that we need to address.
100%.
But how they engage with this space and how comfortable they feel and how welcomed or how listened to, those are things you just can't get around. You just have to stop a moment and just say, this is what I want. And, you know that from being a parent.
Yes.
You know, there are moments where, because I said so.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
And then there are moments where you're just going to have to stop and say, Mom, why are you rushing us? You know what I mean? Where are we going? What is this about? And until you explain the importance of that, they can't understand the pace you're moving at. And there are times where you just don't have time to explain. It's get in the car.
Exactly.
This is an emergency. There's some urgency around what we're doing for sure. Because you and I know from you spending time with me at the flea, personally, business-wise, timing, you know? When we met and you were doing, you know, Walk Wednesdays, yep, and you know,
we met at Joe Max.
Yeah, you know, there were no conversations about a building in that moment.
No,
like not one. Mm-mm. You know, it was us talking about an initiative you wanted to bring to the community and shift a mentality about how walkable this community is and how much we spend on transportation. And you know,
so really, I wanted us to walk farther. And that's why I'm like, this building would be awesome.
I wonder who I put a petition into to get a sign now.
That's right. I think we may have some extras. We could just reface it.
You know what I mean? Yeah, that's probably, you go to bed like, everybody want a sign. Can't put signs everywhere. I know. Everybody want a sign now.
There is the thing of too much of a good thing.
Yeah, but I believe, as you stated, this small slice of our own space downtown will be a sign in itself.
100%.
You know, a sign of new things to come, new beginnings, a sign of the shift that we need to make in how we imagined downtown, imagine the riverfront, imagine how we entertain ourselves and educate ourselves and support the community. So, yeah, you know, I won't pick on you just yet for a physical sign, but I am still reliant on you and the support of this community to make this as blatant of a sign, metaphorically speaking, as we can.
100%.
Because we need those signs. These signs that show us that there is hope and that things are changing for the better here. So.
Yay.
Yay.
Well, thank you for coming on.
Most of that will be edited out.
No. So I
when
do.
When we look at how much time you and I can.
I do have to say this. So yeah. Josh Dunn at Birdfish was like, you need a tagline, Lisa.
Ah.
So, and I've been forgetting to say it for like the past, I don't know, 7 podcasts. Yeah. but I am going to say it this time. So this is Josh Dunn's creativity, Birdfish, but he came up with my tagline going real estate and real hops.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Cheers. Although I already drank all mine.
I'm a little bit far.
Pace yourself.
That's right. 6.7.
Right. 6.7. Thanks, modern methods.
Any mistakes I make today? Thank you. Bye.